executive session and just waiting on a few others to get here. And thank you to everyone that's on the line for your patience with us. So at this point, I believe we're moving on to reports. We'll hand things off to our superintendent.
Okay, for December, for the Fund 6521, the hospital district, we had a fairly regular December. Our cash ending was $691,986, which was above our budget estimation by about $11,000, $12,000. So when the beginning cash letter comes out from the county in March, April or something, it'll reflect that. And then we'll do a budget adjustment for that change. We had a revenue of $24,293, which was basically all either property tax or leasehold tax. And the leasehold tax this year did end with above budget. We had budgeted $8,000 and it was close to $10,000. So whatever they're doing in the county for leasehold taxes, it's really gone up the last couple of years. For the whole year, we ended with $1,392,807. That was 67% of what our revised budget projections are. It was lower because we didn't do some grants and we have basically stopped getting any kind of income from the old medical center accounts. Those are basically mostly all charged off. There's a couple of them left in the legal system, but we get hardly anything from that. We finished 73% above our budget projections than last December. And for the whole year, we were up 2.6% for our property tax here. So that also, as we talked about earlier, the property tax revenues were good this year. COVID did not affect it for this year, but we will be still watching that next year as the first tax date comes up in April to see, you know, how people are faring then. The county treasurer's office is also watching it very closely, and they will step in and help people if they need it on a one-on-one basis. So that's good that everybody has their eyes and ears open and ready to help when necessary. Our budget projections for the end of the year, the county is not quite finished closing the year. They still have some general journal entries to make. So the numbers might change slightly. So that's why I did not give a full end of the year report. I want to wait for them to actually close the month so I can do things, you know, when it's final. The things that we were over budget on basically were the taxes for the wages, and that was can be explained with the way we upped our wages for changing positions, my position, Mason's position, things like that. But next year we will have a better handle on that, and possibly with my leaving, you will have the opportunity to kind of look at things again, and I hope you will look at the full picture of the district and do what's necessary to make everything run as smoothly as possible. And I know you still will be working on the EMS integration and how that might go, and that will definitely affect how and what you do with the rest of the district. The long-term care plan grant will be 1 year. It will go till this September 29th. And then the care coordination grant is a 3-year grant. But at the end of this year, it will significantly have some outcomes. And Kyle, the HUB coordinator, is making determinations on community health workers and who they might be seeing. So all of that will need to be looked at, and it's really exciting. I'm a little bit disappointed that I won't be here for when the grants end, because I waited so long to get to this point to have these grants do these things. But I'm very excited that the district will be able to look further at long-term care. And I think our board has some very good people for the long-term care things. So that will be an ongoing project for you. Does anybody have any questions about the financials for December?
Come visit Pam when the
We'll keep you apprised. Don't worry, you started this off. We'll be happy to.
Well, I am sure, no matter where I am, that I will at least be here yearly for a trip to see everybody and visit my mom and dad's grave and such. So you won't get rid of me totally. So I definitely will check in if I'm not here. No questions on the financials? Like I said, you'll get a better detailed version of them this next month.
Yeah, you're doing like a 13th month thing, right?
Yeah.
And we'll have them more updated. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I'm glad that revenue was holding.
Yeah, that's a good sign. As far as operations, we're still in the middle of our audit for 2019 financial reporting. I got my last kind of big list of things that the auditors want. So hopefully they say that after that they should be into their getting result phase, and hopefully they will we can get the exit interview and everything scheduled well before I leave, so that will be cleaned up. Talked about the grants. As far as public records requests goes, we didn't get any further requests in December. And for the total year, we have about 5 or 6 requests. And so far in actual dollars, we spent about $1,000 for attorneys to look at those public records requests. We still have a couple of big ones out there that we have not finished, and the attorneys have not gone over yet, so we will have expense for that. But for right now, we have spent about $1,000. So,
just to be clear, the attorney is going through them, and we are releasing an installment shortly. I don't want, if that person is listening, I don't want them to think that we haven't worked on it. We've definitely worked on it.
Yes, they're definitely being worked on, but we just haven't got an actual bill from our attorney. So,
yeah, sorry,
it's been about $1,000. Like I said, Kyle Davies, he's the HUB coordinator for the care coordination grant, and he is officing here at the public hospital district office. So he is working very hard on his part, and it's nice to have somebody in the office now that Nathan's not here very much, and we spend some good deliberation time talking about different things. And I think I've told you in a Friday update about the wall that has all the different they're on post-it notes, different colors, and the different colors mean something. But it's quite impressive to see what our county and what our island has in the way of resources for this, and how far out this touches our community. So if you ever want to come in and look at that, and I can walk you through it, or Kyle can walk you through it. It's really quite impressive and positive to look at what we have and what we will be doing. So, anybody have any questions?
Well, I do. So regarding this long-term care project that Kyle Davies is working on, and that you're as the superintendent, you're sort of in charge of the accounting process related to that. So the money is coming through the public hospital district. It's quite similar in some ways to the way the public money comes through our district to fund Peace Health, or to send funds to, Planned Parenthood. And we provide oversight or financial oversight over that. And we receive reports from those agencies, the same way that we are responsible for the financial oversight for EMS. So my question is, as this program grows, and as the public hospital district is technically financially connected to it, how do you foresee the reporting that comes back to us? Is that going to be a similar thing as to what like PIMC does with their two annual reports when we provide subsidy? It's just because this is a very exciting project, and it would be great to be able to know what's happening and how the time and money is being used.
Sure. I can tell you that the difference in the money coming in and going out is that the property tax revenues come in, and we give that subsidy amount to PIMC, where this money with the grants comes from federal HRSA funds and comes to our district. And then I get timesheets for the people that are working on it, and then I request that money specifically from HRSA and then it's deposited into our account, and then I request it from the county to be paid out to them. And there are specific bar numbers that are to each one of those amounts as going forward. I will make my first draw and paying out probably next week. I've requested money to come in. I'm waiting for that. And after that, and going forward, every month there will be a report from the care unit, the Evelyn Perilous, and there will be reports that will be shared, that can be shared with that. As far as financially, in the financial reports, every quarter you have to make a financial report to HRSA, and it's kind of a balancing of they look at, okay, how much money did you draw down, and how much money did you spend, and does that reconcile? And I can also give reports on that, and every time I make a drawdown, I have a big Excel spreadsheet that has the project budget listed, and it shows where that money is expensed to. So at the end of the quarter, there will be a summary report, so you can see where the money's spent and where it's gone. And then there's a P. It's called a PIM. Reports, PIMS. I'm sorry, I can't tell you all the letters stand for, but it's a report that is sent to HRSA that actually reports on everything that's going on with the grant. From we made a standard report at the beginning as like a baseline report, and we sent that in, and then every, I don't know if it's every month or every quarter, that you make another report as to what's going on right currently, and you send that in. And so those reports will be available also that will show those reports will show more of what is actually going on with all of the phases. It's not just a financial report, where my reports and what the district is charged with keeping up with is all about finances and keeping up with the money, where the other reports are about the whole project and what is going on with that. So yeah, there will be several different kinds of reporting. Actually, you'll probably get more reports than you get from PINC because they just do theirs twice a year. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Great, thanks. Yeah, I just, I'm excited to see this grow and that there's potential for funding in other ways. If we find money within the PhD budget at some point in the future, I just nice to know that we'll know what's happening. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if that's all on that, we'll hand things over to Mr. Butler.
Oh, I guess I do something, right? let's see. So you guys have my report. I thought we'd go through December 1st and then talk about the year-end report. But we can certainly mix and match as desired. Does that work? Okay.
Yeah, I really appreciate the annual report. It's great to see it laid out like that. Thank you.
There may be some last minute adjustments to the financials, but that's pretty close to what it will be. Okay. So you guys have my written report. I don't want to belabor it. December, one of the main things about operations in December was we were very low on calls, particularly compared against historical numbers. The actual number of calls was, what was it here? It was 58 runs compared to 92 in 2019. So this is by far and away the most substantial drop of the entire year. And it's about, 250% more than any other drop in the year. The lowest drop we had in 2020 compared against the prior year, I think was like 15%. And that was soon after COVID hit. And it's mainly, we believe, although we have no way to totally verify this, that it's because people are sort of scared to call 911. One of the problems we've had is that people wait too long and see kind of more serious cases. In the case of December, it seems likely the reason run numbers were low is because people weren't traveling. Usually December, a lot of people come to the island for the holidays. And we didn't see that this year. I mean, there were definitely people that traveled, and that's what we saw, an uptick in COVID late December, early January as a result. But it was not, but it definitely seems to be the case that it was really much lower than usual. That said, I mean, there was nothing terribly remarkable about December compared to other months. Our response times were all reliable and solid. We continue to do a great job. Our people are awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I kind of was curious I can certainly report on all of this, but I thought I would just address a few things that I'm thinking about, kind of like I did last time. And I got some positive feedback on that from you guys. And our board reports are on our website. And not only on our website, but I send them out to the agency so that people in our agency can look at them. And many of them, they come and they fill a few shifts, but they don't see kind of globally how the agency is for the month. So I like to think that's of interest to them. Some of the large projects we've been involved in since December, probably the biggest thing of note is the vaccine clinics. Currently, those are being held on Salmon Island on Wednesdays through the local Department of Health. And then they're doing Orcas and Lopez another day of the week each. And they're looking at adding another day to San Juan Island on Tuesdays. Initially, you know, it was 60 people a day here on San Juan Island. I'm not sure the volume on the other islands. And it was your 1A population, which is healthcare workers, people, and there's two tiers. The phase thing is kind of complicated. It didn't help that the governor rolled out his new phase system for opening the state. And then there's the old phase system. Lots of phases. Bottom line is 1A, tier one, are essentially first responders, healthcare workers who are sort of actively at risk and deal with patients and that sort of thing, less than 6 feet. Tier two are all other people in a healthcare setting. So, you know, even like your janitor, you know, people who are around other healthcare workers who are in a healthcare setting, that sort of thing. So they were pretty much done with tier one of 1A about two and a half weeks ago, I believe. And they started doing 1B. The catch is we're now doing booster shots for 1A, tier one and tier two. So today, our agency at the clinic, I got, I think 20 of our people got their booster shot. And next week, most of the rest of our tier one people will get their booster shot. So by the end of next week, the vast majority of our agency will be fully vaccinated for COVID-19. Be more appreciative or more grateful to the Department of Health and the state for making this happen. And we're just very pleased to be able to be a part of it and helping the community. So we've been putting an EMT on standby at the clinics. It's a modest expenditure for the district. We're gonna look at getting reimbursed, but it's, you know, it's, we're paying basically $50 a shift. Now that we're doing basically a morning shift for prime doses, an afternoon shift for booster doses, you know, it's gonna be $100 a week. So it's not a huge expense. Really more significant than the monetary expense is the time. You know, we've got to bring down the ambulance from Roche Harbor, our third out ambulance, 833. 831 and 832 we keep in the station here. And 831 is our first out ambulance. And so obviously that's a non-starter. We're not going to send that to the, you know, to the vaccine clinic. And then if you get a call and then another call comes, you want 832 to be available. And that's also our COVID rig. And we get COVID transports. We treat COVID patients. And so you definitely want, you don't want to use either of those rigs. So in terms of logistics, it's a bit of an extra strain on staff and duty crews, bringing down that third ambulance, taking it to the fairgrounds. We don't, strictly speaking, have to take an ambulance. I feel like it provides a sense of security. It's also kind of a convenient way to transport your stuff, and it kind of signifies to people we're present, we're here. And we haven't had, so there's been one incident in all this time that someone had, we had to actually have 911 call, and we went and we had to treat a patient. As far as I know, they're okay. But mostly this has gone well, even the booster shots today. Knock on wood for next week for the rest of the crew. So that's one of the major things we're working on, is the vaccine clinics. I know that the county, I attend these, you know, it's terrible time, 7:30 a.m. on Wednesdays. It's awful. Usually I have training Tuesday nights twice a month. So it's like, you know, get home from training, 9, 10 p.m., up at 7 a.m. It's not great, but it is what it is. The county is being fantastic. And based on those partner calls, it sounds like Friday Harbor Drug has been approved as a distributor. And they're going to be running about 100 doses a week. I'm not sure if they're going to do scheduling through the county or do their own scheduling. And then, let's see, Eventide has been approved. And I'm not sure the volume they're going to do. Both these entities will have trouble with volume because of space restrictions you know, you don't want to get people to have, you don't want to give people COVID when they come to get their vaccine. You've got to still follow all your precautions, you know. So 6 feet, 6 foot distance and trying to get that volume, and they come in vials of 10. So it's a whole thing. I'm not sure how much volume they can do. We really need Peace Health on board. That's what we need to really vaccinate our island. We need Peace Health and we need adequate vaccines. So Peace Health is working on that. And there's been a few hiccups and they're working on getting that straightened out. So, and that's sort of on the state side. And I'm not sure they would appreciate me sort of laying out everything in a public meeting about it, but you're welcome to call me and talk to me. So they're working on it. They're going to work it out. Because the best case scenario for our community is if people can go to Peace Health, and they're likely to do it after hours or on Saturdays, get vaccinated through the clinic. You've got an ER right there. You don't need EMS on standby. Get people through, get people out, right? That's by far and away. I mean, if you got to vaccinate, how many people on this island, 8,000 or something on San Juan Island? If you want to get all these people, you know, these clinics weekly where you're trying to do, you know, 60 prime, 60 boosters, and it's going to take a long time. So we've got to get the volume. So we need partner agencies for that. Our role as EMS is to be supportive, to try to help help them run smoothly. The Department of Health is definitely stretched for resources. If you can think about the fact that they already had full-time jobs, and now they're trying to staff these clinics and going to all the islands, and it's a huge undertaking. So they're working on that, and we're happy to support them. Did any of you want, did any of you have questions about the vaccine or about the operational aspects of that?
No, I'm glad that we're doing what we can to help. Is there anything else you think we could do to be useful to the Department of Health further than what we're already doing at EMS?
I mean,
you're getting volunteers to sign up for this that aren't scheduled for a shift. So this is just volunteer membership that's taking this on?
Correct. The booster shots today, I had a medic on duty, a medic on standby, and I sent Lainey just because we were all a little nervous about the first round of booster shots. Mm-hmm. But typically, it's just an EMT, a volunteer EMT. I don't want to use duty crew. 1 week we did have an outer island transport that happened at the same time as the clinic. And that highlights the downside of using a duty crew. If we had sent the duty crew and we had no one else, they would have had all these thought out vaccines and it just would have been a disaster, right? So you've got to use a second crew. It's not a huge stress in terms of money, but it is a stress in terms of personnel because we're trying to fill shifts in the station too. And we've started another, you know, rotation for these clinics that people can sign up for. And it's a difficult shift. You've got to work for 3 or 4 hours and it's constant work and you're on your feet and you're directing traffic and monitoring people. Like it's, we're not paying tons of money for this. So, but it's gone fine. And I don't really think there's a lot more we can do to help. Frankly, I've just tried to be as easy to work with as possible. Tell me what time you want us there. I'll have someone there. That's how I've handled this. Because they're way over scheduled and working way too much. So we also have implemented COVID policies in our station. We'll have to, you know, I've sent those out to you guys so you can see them. But it's pretty straightforward. Let's see, I reported to you on where our agency staff and personnel are at. A few like kind of financial things. Our reserve fund transfer, we did that based on our budget and on our capital improvement plan. We went in and transferred money from the general fund to the reserve fund. I think it was $109,000. So that's our transfer for the year. We've brought on some per diem medics. One of the challenges we have is that we have lost, you know, when it comes to EMTs, you've got a lot of sort of volunteers who can step in if your staff are gone, but you don't really have that with medics. And so when I came on, I was kind of worried about critical staffing levels on that issue. And so we've brought on two new per diem medics. They're local to our county. And hopefully that will go well. I think that gives us a little bit more stability, particularly as we approach negotiations with the medics and possible changes that may happen there. We need to have that resource available to us to ensure that we can cover shifts. Let's see. On the subject of medics, I wanted to discuss a couple of things with the board. Three things, really, that I wanted to discuss and get your comment on. Number one, starting with the medics, though, is I believe we do need to send a medic to medics. We do need to send a student to medic school. I think I've talked to most of you individually about this. So basically how it works is Medic One down in Seattle operates, I don't know the technical name for it, but basically a paramedic training school. And they use it mostly to replenish their own ranks and to ensure that they have staffing. They open that school at no cost to rural agencies and to places that need medics. And one of the challenges we face in our community is hiring for fit. And it's something I've talked with people at other companies and organizations in the county about. When you make an off-island hire here, you have no guarantee they will be happy here. And if they are happy here, you have no guarantee that their spouse or kids will be happy here. And it's a common problem. Lopez, you know, their chief, you know, his family didn't like it here. Ended up leaving. Took him a year to fill that position. I know that, you know, people at other organizations have complained about this to me as well, where it's just very hard to get people to stay. And so this program, sending a student to medic school, does two things for us. Number one is it gives an incentive, a goal, a kind of overarching a possibility to our EMT volunteers that you come and you volunteer here and you participate in our agency, and you may at some point get a job as a full-time EMT or even sent to medic school. And that helps incentivize our volunteers. Number two, it makes sure that our hire, if we hire a new medic, and I'm not just to be clear to the public listening, we're not replacing a medic, we're looking at adding a medic. It ensures that it's a good fit. And so you don't expend a ton of effort making a hire only to have them leave. I've done the financial analysis. I believe our district can afford this. And basically it would be it would start in late summer, early fall. I believe it's August or September. That's probably summer. It's about 10 months and then a 3-month kind of probationary period where they have to follow around another medic and then the MPD certifies them, okay, you're good to go, you can be a solo freestanding medic. Whole process would likely to be complete by the fall of 2022. Now, it is possible that we will integrate with the fire district, and that is one of the concerns I had. Like, well, we don't want to hire this person if the fire district's not interested, and that's what we're looking at. Fire district, very supportive of this. They recognize the need. We need a medic, particularly if you bring the medics into the station 24/7, which will reduce significantly the number of shifts they fill, because they fill, you know, their system as they can respond from home. And so in return, they work more shifts than people stationed in the station. So the bottom line is, I think we need a medic. I think we need to do this. But it's a significant expenditure and commitment. We need to sign a contract with this candidate. This candidate needs to be guaranteed a job, a full-time job when they get out of medic school. And they need to be paid a stipend. I would think the stipend would be around $40,000 to $50,000. It's a big decision, and it doesn't need to be made tonight. but I'm interested to know if the board is comfortable with me pursuing this. Because certainly it's not in our budget. It's not been planned for. And I want to answer any questions you may have about that. And ideally, I would present a resolution to you for your review that would authorize the expenditure of funds for that purpose.